Hello, anybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Lata Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latarecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latarecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. We are on vacation this week, so this is going to be a Recovery Radio replay. It's an interview with Dan R. from Sacramento, California, and he's going to share with us about a program called Codependence Anonymous, and it's a great show. I'm happy to run it again at First Graham back in 2021, and I think you'll enjoy it. And here's Recovery Radio with Dan R. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Recovery Radio. I'm Radio Johnny, and I'm here with Miss Denise.
Hello, everyone.
And we actually are putting some new content out this week for you. And we've got a great interview lined up here with Dan R. from California. He's been on the show before. And he is not only working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, he's also been long involved in an organization called Codependence Anonymous. So say hello, Dan.
Hi, Denise. Hi, Johnny. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, again, today we're going to be talking about a program of recovery from codependence that we haven't really talked about before. Neither Denise nor I has really been involved with CODA, the organization, directly. But in doing our research for the show, we found out we have a lot of common ground as far as our recovery programs along with CODA. And Dan, why don't you give us the basic of what CODA is?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. Well, Codependence Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women whose common purpose is to develop healthy, loving relationships. And the only requirement for membership is simply a desire for healthy and loving relationships. And we get together to support and share with each other in this journey of self-discovery. Living the program allows each of us to become more and more honest with ourselves about our personal histories and our own codependent behaviors. We can flesh that out a little bit. And we do use, like you said, the Alcoholics Anonymous 12 steps and 12 traditions for knowledge and wisdom. And those are the principles of the program. And they guide us to develop honest and fulfilling relationships with ourselves, our higher power, and other people.
Fabulous. Cool.
That's awesome.
Cool. I noticed in looking at some of this information that there is an outline that you can see online. If anyone's interested in this, it's www.coda.org.
That's correct.
And pieces of literature you can download from there is called Recovery Patterns of Codependence. And I think those things really kind of identify what codependency looks like. Once you've identified what a codependent behavior or pattern, they call them patterns here, look like, they also have a in recovery what it should look like. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about those, Dan?
All right. Yes, sure. By all means, Johnny. Yeah, when I was first receiving some counseling, when I was really struggling with some deep issues in my life, really despairing, my counselor gave me a book that pretty much was a overview of these patterns of codependence. So I'm just going to read a few and kind of let folks know this is what codependents are, and you can see if you can check off a few. As codependents, we often label others with our own negative traits. But in recovery, we acknowledge that I may own those negative traits that I often perceive in others. As codependents, we often think that we can take care of ourselves without any help from other people. Whereas in recovery, I acknowledge that I sometimes need the help of other people. As codependents, we often have difficulty making decisions, but in recovery, I trust my ability to make effective decisions. We often judge what we think about ourselves. We judge what we think and say and do. We judge them harshly as never good enough. But in recovery, I accept myself as I am. I emphasize progress over perfection. Codependents often value others' approval of our thinking, feelings, and behaviors over our own. And in recovery, I value the opinions of those I trust without needing to gain their approval. And I have confidence in myself. Codependents often don't perceive ourselves as lovable or worthwhile persons. Whereas in recovery, I recognize myself as being a lovable and valuable person. Just a couple more.
Yeah, sure.
Codependents often have difficulty admitting a mistake. But in recovery, I continue to take my personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it. Codependents often need to appear to be right in the eyes of others, and may even lie to look good. I checked that one off. In recovery, I'm honest with myself about my behaviors and my motivations. I feel secure enough to admit my mistakes to others and to myself, and to hear their opinions without feeling threatened. Codependents often have trouble setting healthy priorities and boundaries. But in recovery, I'm able to establish and uphold healthy priorities and healthy boundaries in my life. Wrap up a couple more. Codependents are often extremely loyal, and we remain in harmful situations way too long. But in recovery, I'm committed to my safety, and I leave situations that feel unsafe or inconsistent with my goals. Codependents, we often accept sexual attention when we really want love. In recovery, my sexuality is grounded in genuine intimacy and connection. When I feel the need to be loved, I express my heart's desire. I do not settle for sex without love. And finally, as codependents, we give up our truth to gain the approval of others or to avoid change. But in recovery, I stand in my truth, and I maintain my integrity, whether others approve of it or not, even if it means making difficult changes in my life. So when I went through a book about codependency, and I checked off about 25 or 30 of those 50, so my counselor said, you were originally hurt by people and in relationships with people. So it's actually people, healthy people, that are going to help you heal. Yeah. So go find yourself a group, walk through the door, and work the program they present to you, and go for a while. And what's it been? 5 years, Johnny? Yeah, 5 years.
So what was it?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it hit me as a question. So what was that like that first time that you went to go to a meeting.
Yeah.
For this.
What did it look like walking in the door, knowing basically probably very little at most?
Well, it is similar to an addict, alcohol or drug addict. You know, you ask yourself the question: is this room going to be filled with weird people? Are they going to put me on the podium and ask me, embarrassing questions? Will I have to share from the depth of my heart? And all these things you didn't even know that you could even do, period, anyway, let alone do it in front of a group of people you didn't know. So I have that fear and trepidation. But as we say in CODA, the pain of not getting help is no worse than the pain of getting help. As a matter of fact, the pain of not getting help is much worse than the pain of getting help. So I might as well go through the pain of going to get the help and then try to get out of the misery that I was in. And so somehow by God's grace, I was able to muster up enough courage to walk through the door and was greeted by a whole group of very supportive, confidential, caring, loving people who were just like me. And so I kind of blew a lot of that up in my head that I didn't need to.
Oh yeah, I absolutely relate to it. The first time I went to an AA meeting, I experienced something I refer to as personal paralysis, where I stood in the parking lot staring into this room, which is all windows on one side of the building, and people were drinking coffee and smoking and laughing and chatting, and overwhelmed with fear of what was going to happen when I went inside. And even though my mother had been in AA for years, I never really asked much about it. That was her thing. I didn't have a problem at that time, at least not one that I was willing to acknowledge. And then finally a man noticed me from inside and came out and asked me if I was looking for an AA meeting, and I said yeah, and he goes, well, come on in, you can't hear it from out there. And so I went in. But yeah, that and just like your experience, all that fear and trepidation got blown up in about 30 seconds.
So Dan, I really like how you talked about saying, well, I guess it was your counselor that said it was people that hurt you, but you were going to need to go find some healthy people and, work on this. And I think that that's actually really key, is that when we think about people hurting us, we're like, the last thing we want to do is go be around people. I mean, have you experienced that, or have you been around anyone else who shared about the struggle to then trust people and work on things in relationship?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because there's so many histories that we've all had in the rooms. We all are there for a common reason, a common purpose, and a common hope. Mm-hmm. And our experiences, while they are a bit different, there's a lot of trust issues involved in a lot of it. I don't really want to describe all the horrendous things that could happen to a person in their childhood, but there are a number. Sometimes the ladies go through different issues than guys, but either way, there's typically some sort of dysfunctional home where there's drug or alcohol abuse or emotional or physical abuse. And so coming to a group, it can be, it can be daunting, and trusting somebody to, I'm going to open up in front of strangers. And so there is that, that halting feeling until the shares. And then I didn't have to share. They never said, oh, here's the new guy, would you please stand up and share your story? They don't do that. We don't do that. And AA doesn't do that either. So you're allowed to say, hi, my name is Dan, and I'm not sure why I'm here. you're more than, able to say something like that.
Nice.
And then the growth takes time. You hear other people share. They tell the truth as much as they want to and are able to. And it's brief shares, you know, 2-3 minute shares. And then after you go around the room and you hear 5 or 10 people like that share, you kind of say to yourself, mm-hmm. oh, this is a safe place. These people are just like me. And God is going to heal me here. And I can trust this process. And it's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be in 1 week or 2 or 3 meetings. I'm going to keep coming back for a while and, you know, ask somebody if they would mentor me, sponsor me, and, you know, maybe get some literature. But primary, you know, keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like being able to hear other people be vulnerable about the truth of the things that they've been through and how the progress that they've made helps the newcomer be able to kind of get through that being vulnerable, because I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, vulnerability is probably a little hard when you struggle with codependency. Or what what's your take on that?
Yeah, it is. And yet, my counselor told me, you know, the pain of staying in this dysfunctional life that you got going on, the people pleasing, the workaholism, the lying, the keeping up the good facade, the staying in terrible relationships because you don't think you're lovable, your value is low, you know, nobody loves you, you know, you don't deserve better. All of these things that we go through lead eventually to a crisis point in all of our lives where we just don't think we can go on. And rightfully so, you know, our lives have completely become unmanageable. And then to listen to other people say, oh, that was my experience too. And here's the strength I find in this group and from my higher power. And now the hope is for a better life and victory over this lousy, unmanageable, sick life that I've been leading for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. You know, fill in the blank.
Sure.
Yeah, we really receive a lot of encouragement by hearing the shares from other people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very cathartic, and also very similar to the programs that Denise and I work through. Yeah. And I heard less people panic when they hear that G word. You also referred to, like higher power. So I'm assuming that, there's a spiritual healing element in CODA, not unlike, AA or NA or any of the other basically 12-step organizations.
That's right.
Yeah. And I happen to know that, both you and Denise share a very strong faith and belief in Jesus Christ. And participate in the Christian church, but I don't imagine that was a necessity to be involved with CODA.
Oh, by no means. No, by no means. As a matter of fact, when I walk through the door, not only do I have had for a couple decades a strong faith in God, but I didn't anticipate that anybody there would. And so as I walked through the door, I just thought, well, I believed that my higher power, my God, had sent me there. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have an open mind here, God. I'm going to really have an open mind and listen to what these people have to say. I'm just going to listen to what they have to say without judging. And as I walked through the door and heard people share, I could tell, oh, yeah, so this person... They describe or have a faith in God that is different than mine, and I will respect that. And not only have I learned to respect that, I've learned to honor that, and vice versa, and they, myself. And I would say that probably the biggest growing that I did when I walked through the door, it may not sound like it when you hear me talk, but the biggest growing I did when I walked through the door is to listen to other people and value other people as people, and don't put my stuff on them. Let other people be other people. And that is actually, Denise and Johnny, one of the hallmarks of codependency is thinking that I am right all the time and I got all the answers and you're wrong and I'm superior and you're inferior, or flip-flop, I'm inferior and you're superior. And all of those lies and that I've been telling myself for decades just started to melt away as I listen to other people and respect them for who they are. Let them be them. And I have enough work inside here that I need to work on.
That's awesome. It sounds like you've been finding healing there.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
That's so great.
The clarity, Denise, that I have gotten being able to wade through family and interpersonal dynamics that are normally challenging, where somebody says, hey, could you call so-and-so, and they'll call so-and-so and tell them what I'm thinking. That used to be for me a dilemma. Yeah, that was a dilemma. I couldn't see through that.
Yeah.
And now I think, oh, no, I can't do that. That's not a healthy way to communicate. I think you should call them yourself.
Right, you know, exactly.
So, but I take that for granted now. I'm very thankful for it, because I remember when I used to be baffled by those interpersonal relationship dynamics.
Yeah. And it sounds like also like you learned to have good personal boundaries and you're healthy.
Boundaries is a big one
in
codependence. So when it comes to listening to, just an example, not thinking of anyone in particular, I'm listening to this wonderful young lady, I call her my sister, sitting across from me, and she's sharing, oh, I'm back with my boyfriend for the 10th time, and he keeps calling me names or abusing me, and he's, you know, addicted to stuff, and he won't get help, and I really would like to leave him, but I can't. As I listen to that and empathize with her and pray for her and support, just listen, you know, not even talk to her, just listen to her, I think, oh yeah, that's me. Even though I'm not exactly her, that's me too. I don't feel I'm lovable. I don't feel my own opinions are valuable. I don't feel that I can protect myself. And so I learn even from people that are sharing stuff that I haven't even experienced, because the principles are the same. Setting boundaries, you know, doing things that are important to be done to keep me healthy.
Right. Taking good care of yourself, making good choices. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's like you're speaking lingos that I understand. You're speaking a language I understand, some of which I still currently struggle in, but a good handful that I've made so much progress in.
So, progress, not perfection, sister.
Yes, exactly. I'll never arrive, but it's the journey.
It is, and it's a great journey. Once you get to the point of, like Johnny said, having some coffee and laughing a little and not taking yourself too seriously and looking at the victories you've had and the joy that's out there to be had, the serenity of daily life being free.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. It's the greatest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to jump into something. One of the things that falls into the compliance patterns,
sure.
That believe it or not, I actually really relate to really had a pattern of this in my younger years, and that's the accept sexual attention when I actually wanted love. That was for me, relationships for me between the age of, well, let's be kind to me and say 16, 18, somewhere in there. And up until the time I got married, maybe even past that to a certain extent, pursuing relationships, from a point of view of just wanting sexual gratification, or that intimate feeling that comes with, you know, a sexual relationship. But, you know, as I look back on it, I see that, you know, I would meet somebody, quote, fall in love or whatever, and, you know, enter into this little sexual relationship with them. And within, you know, weeks, it's like, well, this doesn't seem so fulfilling anymore. It's gotten old, it's gotten stale, it's not fulfilling anymore, at least not in the way I expected it would be. And then, you know, I would break a heart and move on. It never occurred to me until much later in life that, you know, relationships that are based in sex are pretty much never move much beyond that.
That's right. That's the truth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and think of the other person. They were taking it from the same angle too.
Yeah.
Quite often.
Because in recovery it says the flip side of that, the positive side of that, the goal of that, the hope of that is I do not settle for sex without love.
Right. Right.
And if either you or your partner would have had even an inkling of what that meant, of course, at that age, you know, right. We didn't think, you know, deep at all, much at all.
But it's pretty much all there is at that age.
If any one of us would have had an inkling of what that meant, we would have said, hey, you know, this isn't the healthiest way to start a relationship.
Right, right.
Sure isn't.
And. You know, that was confusing for folks that are, you know, Dan and I have known each other for 50 years, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So both growing up in the San Francisco Bay Area and, you know, in the age of free love and rock and roll and live fast, die young, leave a good looking corpse. You know, that was pretty common relationship.
It was promoted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was promoted,
sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right, right. Our credo,
and
not necessarily in that order, but just, you know, the community, the people we hung out with, the groups that we followed,
Right.
You know, it was it was the thing you did. And certainly a part of our, you know, rebellious phase against, you know, societal norms and...
Against the man.
Yeah, railing against the man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the man's got his foot on my neck, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all that other foolishness. Is it surprising to find out years later that I could actually put my own foot on my neck and hold myself down?
Yeah, much worse than anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And another thing on here that really struck me, giving up your truth to gain approval of others or to avoid change.
Oh, I'm an expert at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would, I'm in with that. Yeah, I'll go with that. It's like, is this really a good idea? You know, is this really, you know, am I going to feel good about this down the road? But that...
Oh, you don't even think that way.
Right, right. But then there's, you know, there's another thing let me see if I can find it here. You know, we want to, value others' approval of our thinking,
right.
Feelings, and behavior over their own. That one feeds into the prior, you know, giving up your truth.
It does. Yeah, that's a low self-esteem pattern. Yeah, very, very common.
Yeah, please tell me that I'm wonderful, please.
Yeah, you know? Tell me I'm loved. Tell me
I'm wonderful.
Tell me I'm smart. Tell me I'm, you know, or tell me I'm not that smart. But tell me how to think.
Right.
What do I need to do to make you love me?
How many of us start saying that at 2 years old, and it's reaffirmed at 5, it's reaffirmed at 10, it's reaffirmed again at 18, and then by that time, when we graduate, or in my case, don't graduate, and then you start proceeding through life, it's like, oh, I don't even check that at the door. That's how I wake up in the morning. Okay, today is a day when I'm going to try to impress others. Go.
Right, they have to like me no matter what, yeah.
Oh, it's
exhausting.
My whole premise for a living is shot.
Yeah.
That's how I start my day.
I've got one for you, Dan. Let me know if this falls under codependency. The I have to fix it. The playing God, I've got to fix it. Is that one?
I did. Yes. Others can't take care of themselves.
Right, I got to fix it.
Yeah. That's a big one, you know.
Totally
exhausting. This person can't be possibly responsible for their own life.
I got to rescue
you. I, the Savior, can come in and give them all my great advice, not, and give them all my good help, not, and I am going to fix them, not going to happen. And this is some, and then I find my value in that.
Oh, yeah. I finally gave that one up for the most part, I think, but it was exhausting.
Destroy your life.
Oh, absolutely. It's like literally playing God, you know? I mean,
playing God.
Yeah, but, because.
Go ahead.
But Denise, you walk a fine line though, because you have children that you need to a certain extent, impose your rule over to make sure they grow into, you know, healthy adults.
I remind them to eat and take showers and to do their homework. But I allow them to have repercussions for their choices. Like if they don't do the things they need to do to prepare, then you know what I mean? Because I'm not gonna fix it, because then they'll grow up and they won't be able to do anything. They'll be like,
they won't be an adult.
Right. Exactly. When my son turned 17, I think it was, I was like, okay, we're going to treat this last year like, you know, like you're an adult. So let's see what kind of choices you make. So before he leaves the house, then if there's a big, you know, fail, at least he's still around some parents, you know?
Well done.
Yes. Thank you. But yeah, my oldest two, it was exhausting always taking care of every single little thing that they needed. So, and now I'm older and I have a little bit more knowledge and stuff. So I abandoned that. I will do everything for you thing. I'm like, yeah.
But I can understand for most people the temptation. I mean, I don't have any children, but you know, when I'm entrusted, you know, somebody's foolish enough to leave their child with me for a few hours, you know, to babysit, you know, I take on that, I try and take on that parental role with a little dose of crazy uncle in there. But I go into pure protect mode because I haven't had the opportunity or I don't feel I have the option to let them fail while, you know, you don't want to hand a broken kid back to a parent. You know?
I do.
Well, he was climbing on the fence and I warned him about it, but I let him do it. And they're like, I'm suing you.
I do keep a little bit better of an eye on my children's friends. Yes.
Right,
because they're
not
mine.
Right. So anyway.
Yeah. And that is reasonable common sense. I think that's a good value. I think the approach, Johnny, that Denise took was such that I'm not going to helicopter mom these kids.
That's what I was thinking, helicopter parent.
Because that is codependent, controlling, overbearing, I'm not going to let you even color outside the lines, honey.
Yeah.
You don't know how imperfect that is. It's just sick, sick behavior. And yet we don't even know we have it. Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Because I was going to say, doesn't it feel loving when you're doing it?
I'm
parenting, I'm nurturing, I'm making sure that everything is going well. But it's just an overboard kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I think, Johnny and Denise, one thing I heard this week that's so true is the first thing that Denise did is acquired the awareness And that is what we've been talking about. Okay, so we're aware of this. Okay, so my life is unmanageable. I want help. I now know people and tools and rooms that I can go to. And now the 12 steps will bring me through that, that faith and trust. And I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And that's the spiritual path, Johnny, that you were talking about, that people can enter into and not have instant belief and instant, you know, definitely not religion, but just enter in a process,
this process works,
of growing spiritually, like you were saying, Johnny, without using my definition of God.
Yeah, because right. The process will get you through the things you need to do to change and to look at, you know, make steps in the right direction. I mean, it's
that's right.
It's a great process.
The awareness is important, but also the action steps
yes.
are important. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here's at least one more that I identify with just absolutely, and it's mask codependence often mask pain in various ways, such as anger,
yes,
humor, or isolation.
Oh, and there you go.
Under yeah. the denial patterns, boy, denial.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, and you know, I may have stopped using alcohol, and I may have learned to control my anger. But I absolutely drive my wife insane when I get humorous or sarcastic when she wants to You're talk right. about something that for her might be, you know, a really serious topic or semi-serious.
That's right.
Or mildly that's serious. Right. And, you know, that's one I really struggle with, because humor was probably my strongest defense mechanism growing up, even as a small child. If the people around me were, you know, losing their minds, screaming and yelling and fighting, and if I could do something to interrupt that by, you know, trying to inject my five-year-old humor into it, I would do that, and you know, I would be successful 20%
of
the time.
Well, and Johnny, at the time, that was a great survival
mechanism
or behavior
yeah.
to, like, little six-year-old Johnny needed that then, but today you can give that up,
right?
You know
right.
what I mean? If you want to, like, if it's not serving you anymore, I mean, we pick up coping behaviors because our brain is trying to survive the situation and live.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
So
that's
but then right. setting that down,
right,
you know, but that's kind of the thing, like recognizing, hey, these are the coping things that I did as a child, but they're not serving me anymore, you know?
Right.
So
that's right. And then the isolation is a big one. Mm-hmm. There's a whole group of people that are listening to this right now that said, okay, so I may have given up the alcohol and the drugs. I may have given up the passive aggressive, irony, sarcasm, all of that. But you know what I do now is I just feel all alone. And so I'm just going to be all alone by myself.
Do you think?
Because nobody understands me, and I'm a peculiar person, and nobody loves me. Mm-hmm. And so we isolate. And oh my goodness, is that dangerous?
That's a good perspective on isolation. Do you think that people also isolate to not be around people, like that they don't like to have interactions with other people? I mean,
well,
is there
because it's. It was painful, mm-hmm. and since I don't have the tools to really have healthy and loving relationships today, isolation at least
avoid
keeps
people.
Me from confronting that feeling of oddness. That
right.
I'm outside. I'm the person outside looking in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you were both talking about the same thing
maybe,
from
yeah.
just from a different perspective.
Yeah,
you
I
know
think so.
The
that's correct.
I'm
that's correct.
I think, Dan, you were talking about the perspective of I'm not the kind of person that people want to talk to, so I'm going to isolate, where Denise was saying I'm the kind of person that I just don't want to talk with people because people are what's ruining my life, you know.
That's right.
People, you know, the world would be so good except for other people.
Yeah, exactly. Very good insight, Denise. That's awesome.
Well, I am a social butterfly, so I've always engaged with people, even if it was ridiculous looking. But I know and have been around some people who've shared about just wanting to isolate to not have to deal with people because it's whatever for them. Again, probably going back to the thing of people were the one that hurt them. And so maybe it triggers things. It could trigger awkwardness or uncomfortable stuff. So people, I also have heard people say people can be scary is one of the things.
Oh yeah, that's right. And
wow.
I
feel like I'm at a meeting right now.
Right. Yeah. This is great. It's like my first CODA meeting. It's awesome.
There you go.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. It's not unusual. People all relate to each other differently, but I think it's a natural, probably something that goes back into our reptilian brain about needing to protect ourselves. I mean, not the survival of, you know, having good emotions and stuff, but, you know, just literally not being killed by things or people around us. I've noticed a lot of what we've talked about here, this codependent behavior in people in general during this COVID shutdown. Oh my God. Where I used to be able to walk down the street and, you know, say hello to people. I mean, their eyes get big, they step to the side, you know, at a much higher rate. I mean, I'm kind of an odd looking fellow, but, you know, I don't have antlers. I mean, I'm not that surprising. What do you think about that, Dan? Have you experienced people having, you know, just tough situations with outside relationships out in public? Have you noticed that at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think it's not unusual for us in a CODA meeting to hear shares where we don't ever say what our last name is and what we do for a living and whether we're blue collar, white collar, professional, whatever. Everybody's equal, right? And it's really important in CODA to say I'm not better than, I'm not lesser than. We're all equals here. And but to hear people share, here's the dynamics at work, here's the dynamics at home, here's the dynamics in my family, here's the dynamics, you know, out on the street, here's the dynamics in my neighborhood, and they're all tricky. All of them are tricky. I would think personally the trickiest one is in a marriage. That's probably the trickiest, and then kids would probably come next. But, you know, when you throw, your neighbors and situations in and coworkers, and, all of that, life is just, for many of us, I'm talking about myself here, just difficult to navigate. And with undoing some of those coping patterns that Denise was talking about, and seeing them for what they are, and seeing that they don't serve me well today, and having options, and seeing what healthy living is like, healthy life is like, and the tools to achieve that, and the support system undergirding that, set boundaries with my friends in CODA, set boundaries with my healthy friends first, before I try to set boundaries with my crazy neighbor. And so it's a system, that starts out not making much sense the first week or two you walk through the door, and then after 6 months and 9 months and a year, and then 2 years, it starts to even out, and the serenity begins to come in, and the love, and it flows out, and the acceptance and the understanding, and let people be what people will be, and to let go and let God, all of that begins to happen. But it's a process, and it takes time. We really emphasize the serenity prayer a lot in CODA. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can. And wisdom to know the difference. And oh my goodness, I think that's CODA. All in one prayer.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's it sounds familiar. I've heard it before, I think, somewhere.
Somewhere. My kids know it, because they get to go to see our kids at our church too. So talk about their feelings and share their stuff. It's pretty cool.
Oh,
yeah, I know,
how
right?
How healthy is that?
It's super healthy.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah.
You know, when I see my grandkids now, the 5-year-old twins, I say, "How are you doing today? Do you miss your friends? Are you really wanting to go play in the park? What is the name of your friend you miss the most?"
Yeah.
And just let them talk and let them get it out, you know. How's your mommy or daddy been treating you? Are they yelling at you? let them emote and let them get it out.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing on denial patterns is having difficulty identifying what they're feeling. You know, that's kind of the thing. When you can't figure out your emotions, I'm assuming that that's something that people experience when they're struggling with codependency. Would that be correct?
That's right. Okay. What am I feeling?
Yeah.
I talked to Johnny many times as my ad hoc sponsor at, you know, 1,000 miles away, and would call a lot of times saying, I'm trying to figure out how to talk to this person, or I'm having a thought about what this person might be thinking or what might happen tomorrow, and I'm trying to piece this all together. And Johnny's like, okay, Dan, let's not get ahead of ourselves. What is it that you're feeling about that? And I'll say, oh, you know, this is what I'm feeling. He says, okay, what's underneath that? And so just even for me to even say, oh, the feeling is anger. He says, okay, is it anger or is it maybe fear? And I go, oh, yeah, it's actually fear. Okay, fear of what? Oh, fear that I may be a failure. Okay, and so what will happen if you fail at this? You know, and so you're right, Denise. Sometimes we just take a surface level feeling and we don't even want to admit that.
Yeah.
Let alone say, okay, underneath that feeling, is there anything rational there, or what's driving underneath that?
Mm-hmm.
And I've found in my own life that probably fear and maybe resentment is probably the two biggest driving boo-boos.
Yeah.
That I come from a bad place when I'm coming from fear and resentment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And most resentments, you know, when you go through the AA fourth step and you're identifying your, you know, your character defects, we find that most resentments are based in fear.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Know.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Because I don't recall where this phrase came from, but I use it early and often, and that's what we despise in others, we loathe in ourselves.
Yeah, and that's one of the ones we read here, too. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And so, Denise, I think that the me 5 years ago would have said, I don't even want to talk about what I'm feeling, mm-hmm. let alone tell you or tell
right.
me what
right.
I'm feeling.
Yeah.
I can't even identify
right.
it.
Yeah.
So once I got to the point of not being afraid to identify my feeling, mm-hmm. I at least kind of like peeling the onion, you know, you start with a surface and then you go to another layer and then you go to another layer, and it takes some time.
It does. Does.
Love and support and time.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the thing. Without having support and the love and community with people,
right.
I mean, you can't really open up. It doesn't really seem safe. So, and you gotta learn to trust
right.
again.
Right, that's true.
And it's kind of like I feel like at times in my life, my brain has been like, you know what, Denise, we're just going to shut down and we're just going to like eat and sleep and do the necessities. But to feel those things or to like process those, I don't think that's going to happen right now. We're going to have to save that for like down the road, you know? So it's like trauma can be quite a thing. So, but I think that trauma can start to, you know, that I started to be able to deal with those things once I got into community. So safe, healthy
that
people.
That reminds me of step three a lot, where, you know, I made a decision.
Yeah.
To turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a higher power in step two that I am coming to believe can help me
right.
do things for me that I cannot do for myself. And in step three, I'm saying, you know, I'm just going to place that in my higher power's timing, knowing that everything's not going to fix today.
Right.
And the right time will come for that trauma to start to be uncovered.
Yeah.
I find for myself that, you know, if it had not been for trauma, pain, and desperation, I doubt I would have gotten into recovery at all.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, I had to be broken enough to be able to say, you know, I need help. I can't fix this on my own.
Nope. You know, I could not either. I was despairing of life itself.
Right. You know, and we're getting close to the end here.
Sure.
But would you agree that thinking about CODA and the way it's you know, uses the very familiar to me 12 steps of recovery, but it seems to address, it seems to be more inclusive, I'll put it that way. It's like almost anyone, you know, whether you are even able to define yourself as codependent or not, there's a valuable set of tools that can
Incredible.
Be preened from this program to be used in everyday life, because I don't think I can think of a single person that I know in or out of recovery that doesn't experience at least a half a dozen things looking at one page of this what does codependent behavior look like.
I think you're right, Johnny. And at our meetings, it's not unusual for someone to say, I've been in this other program, fill in the blank, narcotics, alcohol, overeating, gambling, whatever it is, sex addicts, all these different things. And they say, you know, I've been in that program a long time, you know, maybe a decade or two. And, I want to work on some other stuff. And so I'm here too. I've got two or three meetings I go to, and this is my CODA meeting. So it's, they do overlap, and you're right. This is a very open basket. I once had a reunion with our old street, kind of like the street you lived on, Johnny, where you know all the neighbors.
Right.
And one of the guys had a PhD in, I think it was child psychology and whatnot. And we were barbecuing, and I went over to the side, and I explained to him a little of what I was going through, and I says, so what do you think, buddy, what do you think the percentage of people in our society that are, codependent or dysfunctional or whatever? And he says, oh, probably about 98%.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I can believe that. I can believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's more common than you think.
Absolutely.
Hey, I got this really cool prayer. Can I read it? It's really short.
Please.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think that's a great way to close things down.
Yeah, this is how we close our CODA meetings. It says, the CODA closing prayer. We thank our higher power for all that we have received from this meeting. As we close, may we take with us the wisdom, love, acceptance, and hope of recovery.
Nice.
I like that.
I do too.
It is brief.
It's good.
And it's healthy.
Yep.
Amen.
It is.
All right.
Into that, yeah.
Well, hey, then why don't we wind it up on that very high note? And I'll say, Dan, thank you so much for joining us today via Zoom. We didn't have too many technical issues. Thank God for that. Because it's always fun.
That's so much fun. And I'm encouraged, too. I'm built up.
Well, and I'm super grateful. I think that for me personally, there was some cool God's timing on this interview. And I appreciate you sharing and taking the time to meet with us to record this show. So, and I hope it's a blessing to others as well.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
All right, then we'll say goodbye to you for now, Dan, and to our listening audience, I want to remind you, if you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, you do.